This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. It is Yom HaZikaron.
Boker Tov. Yes, of course, this is a very, very somber day in Israel. It started yesterday with a siren that sounded at 8 p.m. There will be another siren later this morning in approximately 2.25 hours from now, so 10 o'clock South African time. And of course, we ask listeners and everybody else to join us in that minute of silence that we stand in memory of those who have fallen in Israel's wars. Almost 30,000 names now on the list of people who have fallen during the wars of Israel, since indeed even before the founding of the state. And we do count those people, even those who've fallen in wars even before the founding of the state, because they have equally contributed to the country that we have today. And while it's difficult for us to kind of think about the bigger picture on a day like today, when we memorialize individuals, people who have left families devastated, people who have given up their lives and made the ultimate sacrifice so that we can be here in the security that we have, that we can be free and practicing Jews here in Israel and around the world. The big picture somehow gets lost when we think about the individuals, about the parents who've been left behind, about the siblings who are mourning, about the spouses who are left behind to pick up the family, about children who are left orphaned as a result of parents being taken in the wars, and about the individuals and the possibilities that they might have had if their lives hadn't been cut short as a result of the service that they were giving for the state. And of course, this year we add more than 170 new names to the list since this Memorial Day last year. So it's been a very, very trying period, a very, very sober and somber period, during which time we've lost many of our soldiers, indeed some even over the last few days. It's interesting that the way that the day works out is that last night it starts as a state event. There was a central ceremony that took place at the Kotel, at the Western Wall, headed up by the President of Israel. The Chief of General Staff was present, and many other senior people, as well as bereaved families who were represented at that state ceremony. And there were public ceremonies across Israel, in city centers, in open squares, where people stood silent and memorialized those who had been lost. Today, the focus is more individual. The ceremony at 11 o'clock will take place at the military cemetery. People will be standing at the graves of their lost ones, of their loved ones, standing right there to memorialize their memory. So it becomes a much, much more personal thing. It's a state ceremony, and it's a very personal one as we think about the loss of those individuals and the sacrifice that they've given. But I think that we often think about the flow of events over these weeks. A week ago, we memorialized those who fell in the Shoah, 6 million who were killed during the period of the Shoah. This week memorialized those who have fallen in Israel's wars. And tonight at sundown, we celebrate the 78th anniversary of the founding of Israel. Three significant events, which one follows the other. And if you think about the flow, it's almost as if though we think about the dust of the Shoah and the lowest point that Jews reached in probably all of their history, which we memorialized last week. And we've stood up from that dust, and we've stood up from the ruins of the Shoah, and we have continued to sacrifice lives as we fight for our existence and fight for the freedom that we have in our country. And tomorrow we celebrate the results. We celebrate all that has been achieved by the massive sacrifice that has been given, not only by those in the Shoah and others who have died as a result of persecution and anti-Semitism, but also those who have died as a result of their sacrifice in Israel's wars and have died as a result of terrorist activities. And tomorrow we stand up and say, we are at the pinnacle. This is what we have managed to achieve through all of that process, and we can stand up and celebrate the greatness that we have, which is 78 years of independence of our, in our state, in our land. And for those people who think, when we often say, well, it's just a tiny piece of land, and I don't know why the world is so focused on this tiny piece of land, I would say, forget about the size of the land and forget about even talking about the land, because the battle that we have is not about this land. The battle is about the fact that we are here, whether it is in this land or anywhere else. Mm. I don't believe that the result would have been different had we been fighting over a different piece of land, had we not been in Jerusalem, had we not been in this country. I think that the battle would have been the same battle, simply because it's our existence rather than the fact that we happen to be here. So when, you know, the term occupation continues to be recycled over and over again, just bear in mind that it is just language that's being used in order to try to evoke some sort of reaction from people who feel that occupation is an unfair concept. And indeed, it may be an unfair concept, but the issue is that we do not occupy. We happen just to be here. And whether we were somewhere else, it would really, in my view, not be any different. It's not about the land. It's about the fact that we are here. And that's what we are here today to memorialize and tomorrow to celebrate.
Yeah, it's so that is the focus of today. And of course, we'll talk about Yom HaTzmaut tomorrow. Talking about and zooming out to a bigger picture, President Trump has continued to promise that an agreement will be reached with Iran and that it'll be much better than the previous agreement. What does that actually mean?
Well, I don't think a great deal, because if you, your standard is the previous agreement, then you have a very low standard, in my view. So I don't know that any agreement that could be reached would be any worse than the previous agreement. Let's just bear in mind that the previous agreement allowed Iran to continue to enrich uranium, albeit theoretically under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who was supposed to have the right to do inspections, and everything was supposed to have been completely transparent and above board. And yet we know that Iran, first of all, did not adhere to the inspection, that the inspections that were set out in the agreement. And second of all, even if they had adhered to those inspections, we know that there was a lot that was being done, which was behind the scenes, which was below the ground, which was out of plain view, which was really not in terms of the agreement that had been reached. So President Trump continues to say two things which almost seem contradictory, because the ceasefire that was declared, the two-week ceasefire to allow this agreement to be reached, ends tomorrow. And President Trump continues to say, we are not extending the ceasefire. So either he feels that by the time the parties sit down later today in Islamabad, or by the time the ceasefire runs out, there will be an agreement that will be reached very, very quickly, and therefore there will be no need to renew the ceasefire. Or he believes that there is no real agreement to be reached. And though, so there is a certain dance that's going on to present J.D. Vance to the Iranians.
But interesting, because he wasn't going to go, was he, J.D. Vance?
Well, I don't know if he was or he wasn't. President Trump seemed to be quite certain that the U.S. delegation was always going to turn up in Islamabad.
Yes, but I don't think it was. I recall reading, maybe it was on Sunday, that Vance wasn't going. Trump said nothing wrong with him. He's a great guy, but we're concerned about security. And he was sending... he was sending others, but Jared Kushner, but now it seems to be going, which makes me think that there is more of a chance of a deal.
Well, it's interesting because there are people who feel that by J.D. Vance actually being there, that there is no deal to be done because he's perhaps not the best guy for the job, even though Trump presents him as being so. We also know, by the way, behind the scenes, that J.D. Vance is not a great fan of the war against Iran, he had a certain anti-view against this, even though that has not been very widely publicized. It's not a secret, but it hasn't been very broadly publicized that he wasn't very much in favor of this war. So J.D. Vance's involvement in all this is quite interesting. I think the main protagonists here are Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, who are always the main negotiators. They're involved with the Gaza agreement. They're involved in Ukraine and Russia. They're involved in every negotiation that one could think about, and they seem to be the brains behind anything that's going on. So if there is going to be any success, I expect that it'll probably be down to them. The Iranian delegation was to-ing and fro-ing as to whether they were going to turn up or not. It seems that they probably will turn up, even though the conflict in the Straits of Hormuz continues, and there is still a great deal of uncertainty as to who in Iran is really calling the shots. It seems as if though there is a kind of mix of individuals. Everybody seems to think that they have the right to make public statements, but there is a lot of contradiction that's going on in the public statements that are making, at least from the United States, there is only really one source of information, one source of public statements, because I don't think anybody else could get a word in edgewise where the public statements are concerned. So in Iran, they seem to be coming from different sources and seem to be contradicting each other. I expect that the Iranian delegation probably will turn up in Islamabad today. Do I have a high expectation that there will be an agreement? I don't think so. I think that there is still too great a distance between the parties. If President Trump is saying there is no deal without the enriched uranium being handed over to the United States, and if the Iranians are saying under no circumstances will we hand over the enriched uranium, I think the talks are over. And it's difficult for me to see either of the two parties capitulating on that particular issue. That may well be the main point which makes or breaks the deal. And if there is a deal to be done, and if one of the parties does go back on their position on the enriched uranium, it'll be very fascinating to see who it is who ultimately gives up on their view. We've already seen President Trump, by the way, capitulate on the issue of regime change, because we all know what we know to be regime change. President Trump has suddenly decided that the regime change has been achieved because the leaders who were in power then are not the leaders who are in power now. Now, you know, that might well be his convenient interpretation in order to try to point to a success. He claims to be winning big time in this war. It's interesting to think about what he might choose to say if the enriched uranium ultimately is not handed over and yet a deal is struck. I'm just wondering how he might paint that particular picture in view of a potential capitulation on the issue of the enriched uranium. It's also, by the way, interesting that President Trump has seen fit to come out and claim that he was not pushed into this war by Israel. Why he felt, I mean, we know that he's been accused of being, I don't know if a puppet is the right word, but certainly being influenced into the war with Iran by Israel and by Prime Minister Netanyahu in particular. There are many of his opponents who have accused him of that. He's seen it appropriate to come out to deny that. Sometimes staying quiet is better than denying it, because by denying it, you're giving some credence to the accusation. You feel that it's strong enough and significant enough for it to need to be answered. And so in his shoes, I might have been inclined not to say anything rather than to come out saying, under no circumstances was I pushed into this war by Israel. But that's what he's chosen to do. So overall, I think we're in a very interesting situation. And the next few days are certainly going to be influential and interesting. Howard, before we end today's Yom HaZikaron chat, I'd like to just quote the words of the Golani Brigade commander, Lieutenant Colonel Adi Ganon. He made an announcement to his troops who are currently in Lebanon fighting as we speak on this day by radio. And he delivered his memorial address to soldiers by saying the following: today is Memorial Day. All of Israel is uniting around the memory of the fallen, the sons, the friends. This year, we cannot observe with the families as we would like, but the best memorial is the ground that we stand on. In 24 hours, when we go out on another operation, know that thanks to the fallen, thanks to you, and thanks to thousands more soldiers like you, and thanks to your families at home, the state of Israel will be able to celebrate Independence Day. Fantastic words.
Absolutely, Anthony Reich. Thank you, as always, for just bringing us such a poignant and accurate update from Israel. We can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.